Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Ready for Your Freedom Liberties, Current Affairs Podcast, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of Majlis and Ready for Your Radio Liberties Media Manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. Will Uzbekistan join the Russia-led Eurasia Economic Union or not is a big mind-boggling question that has been increasingly discussed in capitals from Washington to Moscow these days. Some are arguing in favor, the others in opposition, but Uzbek officials seem undecided on who to listen. This is the context in which Uzbekistan's President Shavkat Mirziyoyev is planning a trip to Moscow next month. In this first episode of Majlis podcast in 2020, we are here to discuss what is going on here, why Uzbekistan's possible accession to EEU became such an important topic, and what Mirziyoyev is looking for in Moscow. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Umida Hashimova, Central Asia researcher at the Strategic Studies Division of the Center for Naval Analysis in Washington, D.C., who is originally from Uzbekistan, Dr. Medet Tyulganov, a professor and department chair at the American University of Central Asia in Bishkek, Sam Bhotia, writer and researcher focusing on economic affairs of South and Central Asia. I believe Sam is currently joining us from India, and Bruce Fanier, editor of Ready for Europe, Ready for Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlak Uwazi, who is in Prague. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today. So, about Uzbekistan's possible accession to Eurasia Economic Union. Umida, let me start with you. You had a couple of pieces written in recent days. So, why it became so important? Why so many people are talking about this?
Well, I mean, if you think about the, first of all, Uzbekistan is such an used to be an isolationist country, right? It was tried to stay away from Eurasia Economic Union, in particular. The then President Karimov even called this Eurasia Economic Union as a political organization. So why now? What happened in Uzbekistan that it completely switched, that now the Uzbekistan suddenly is interested in this organization? So that's the first reason, I think, why it become such an kind of often talked topic. And again, and then another reason, second reason, is what really lays behind it. What is driving Uzbekistan and what it will get out? I think that's kind of the main reason of that.
So you think Uzbekistan is interested in this? But my feeling was, yeah, Secretary Ross is talking about this in Washington, D.C. Medvedev is responding from Russia, but there was not much concrete, you know, positioning coming out of Tashkent.
Yeah, it does look like the Uzbekistan is kind of, even though it is the main player, but it's kind of playing passive, looking right, looking left. It's kind of discussion between Russia and the U.S. But my feeling is that, and if you read what's coming out from the officials in the Uzbek government, both the president and ministers and legislators, I feel like Uzbekistan has already decided, and it's, yes, we can say it is under pressure from Russia. Well, because it is Russia, it puts pressure on these countries that used to be before in a way it used to dominate. But I think Uzbek government has decided already for itself, and it's actively pursuing, as they have said, they've decided that they're interested in this union 3 years ago, meaning as soon as Mirziyoyev came. So I don't think that the Uzbek are completely passive. They are passive in responding actively and opining, but the decision to join has come from Uzbekistan, and there are a couple of reasons. We can maybe talk later why they think that's the right way to think, but I think Uzbeks are not really fully acted upon.
Yeah, definitely we are going to talk about this reasoning. And also, now after your comments, Mirziyoyev's coming trip to Moscow becomes even more interesting. So we will get to that. But before that, on Umida's point, Sam, I know your article is coming up soon on this topic. Umida is kind of saying that interest is coming, apparently, from Uzbekistan to join this organization. What is your finding? And also, I'd like to take Bruce and Medet, your points on that later.
My view on this is not necessarily about whether Russia, whether the driving force behind this accession is from Russia or from Uzbekistan, but I think the entire idea of Uzbekistan's potential accession to the Eurasian Economic Union. I think it was a kind of like a natural progression of where Uzbekistan's, or at least the question of joining the Eurasian Economic Union, was a natural progression of where Mirziyoyev's foreign policy was going.
And so, Sam, right? You also think, yeah. I mean, the way I understand from your comments, you also think that Uzbekistan is developing an interest to join this union, correct?
I'm not sure. I think it's I think it's very difficult to say. I mean, if you look at statements from officials, for example, from like I think the deputy prime minister, they have mentioned the benefits of joining the Eurasian Economic Union. They've specifically focused on economic benefits. But again, back to the point about, you know, this natural progression in foreign policy. I think a key plank of Mirziyoyev's foreign policy has been regional integration. And obviously the Eurasian Economic Union is a regional integration effort in Eurasia, encompassing Russia and some of these former Soviet Union republics. So it comes naturally from the Russian side of the question to Uzbekistan and Tashkent that, you know, you are pursuing regional integration. So, and we ourselves have a body that is already pursuing regional integration as well.
On your point, Sam, I totally understand that Moscow is pressing Uzbekistan to join this discussion. I mean, the feeling in Uzbekistan seems to be, I don't know what the authorities think about this, but local discussion is kind of diverse on which way Uzbekistan should go. Umida changed the picture of my entire discussion with talking about the Uzbekistan's growing interest in this union, which I thought kind of interesting. So what is your take on this? Bruce, let's start with you.
Well, I mean, certainly the statement that Mirziyoyev made before the end of last year about them being interested in joining large international organizations and that it wouldn't sacrifice anything of Uzbekistan's sovereignty, I think you had to read that as being directed toward membership in the Eurasian Economic Union. You know, that said, there's been a lot of problems with this organization. And that's why I'm glad Medet is here, because he's actually from a country that joined. You know, this is tough. You know, Umida in one of her articles outlined some of the problems with this. And there's been other articles, too, that pointed out that Uzbekistan is just emerging from relative isolation and trying to court as many economic ties as it can around the world. And it will box itself in a little bit by doing this. I mean, I can see some kind of immediate advantages, certainly in the case of their migrant laborers, for instance, right? You know, I mean, it's no secret that migrant laborers from Kyrgyzstan have a better deal than those from Tajikistan or Uzbekistan at the moment. So there's that. But in actual terms of trade, you know, certainly once they formed this latest incarnation of the Eurasian Economic Union, you know, in 2015, at first trade dropped between the members, you know, and there's a lot of problems with that, too. And so for a country like Uzbekistan that's trying to re-engage with the international community, this seems to be like shackling it somewhat to the wall. And I think it will find it harder to move forward.
Bruce, you say that in terms of dropping the trade. But I kind of recall Mirziyayev's comments earlier last year saying that, you know, 70% of Uzbekistan's external transaction takes place with countries who are the member of EEU. So, I mean, it looks like it's, you know, there is a huge reason to join that.
Well, I would mention China, just for one. They're not in, you know, and Uzbekistan does a lot of trade with China, you know, and so you know, and Medet would be able to speak better about what's happened with Kyrgyzstan, but China not being a member means that they don't enjoy the benefits of membership in this. So there's tariffs and duties that Russia and by extension the EEU expect that will be applied to these other countries. And of course Uzbekistan is reaching out to the West. It's had you know, its ties were largely severed post Andijan, and I think that was the point that Secretary of Economics of the Economy Ross was trying to make too, was that you're trying to join the World Trade Organization and yet you're going to confine yourself to having to abide by these rules and regulations that the EU is putting on people at the same time. So it's not you hinder partnerships further abroad, which Uzbekistan wants.
That's interesting, Bruce, what you say. I mean, Secretary Ross's point. Kyrgyzstan is in the EU and also in World Trade Center. It can handle both of these organizations properly, so why can't Uzbekistan? And also, Bruce referred to Uzbekistan's partnership or trade with China. In Kyrgyzstan has probably more trade with China, more closer to China than Uzbekistan is. If Kyrgyzstan can handle that, why not Uzbekistan?
I think when it comes to WHO, I'm not an expert on that, but it seems to be if unless some countries bring some litigation against a country in regard to this violation of WTO rules, usually things not happening. But Kyrgyzstan is not similar to Uzbekistan in this regard because it's a smaller country, doesn't have a lot of partnership in regard to trade and etc., which things may be different with Uzbekistan in this regard. So for Kyrgyzstan, what we see now somehow looks similar to what was happening back in 2010-12 when during the state visit of Putin when he came in 2012, it was officially proclaimed that Kyrgyzstan is definitely joining customs union at that time and then later to EES. And it was starting with some slight discussion official proclamations that we should explore possibilities, but then it went unequivocally to decision to join the union. Maybe like for Kyrgyzstan, maybe for Uzbekistan, same situation, like you cannot ignore presence of large union. Maybe like at that time was for Kyrgyzstan, now it's also the same when it comes to Russian point of view that, it should grow and Russia needs new members. If it doesn't grow, it means that union is not viable. And especially after Ukraine fell off from that scheme, Uzbekistan is an act big pivotal country which can boost and give a drive to the union. But Kyrgyzstan was a different story, of course. And when it comes to the experience of Kyrgyzstan, of course, we should take into account that in regard to many things, we have this crisis in Russia, in economies and sanctions against Russia, and we have devaluation of tenge in Kazakhstan, which also affected a lot of economic parameters and so forth. But still, even with that in mind, we can say that even all economists agree here that there was no clear economic benefits for Kyrgyzstan. Someone can say, for Kyrgyzstan, is 4 years enough to judge or not? It's another, of course, question, but still up to now, there is no clear benefit, except for migrants, of course, as Bruce noted, with some easier conditions were created to them by Russia, and including abolition of patents, less pyramids, etc. Except for that, we don't see much of a benefit at this point, at least.
So there is not much benefit. But did Kyrgyzstan lose anything by joining this?
Yeah. I think when it comes to different sectors of economy, if someone comes and visit Bishkek, usually they often go to which used to be the biggest bazaar in Central Asia, Dordoy. Now it's not the same as it was before Kyrgyzstan joined the customs union and Eurasian Economic Union. So that affected a lot. For people who are making their money for the exporting and trying to bring some goods, trying to remake them and then sell further, it did work. Then what will affect starting from this year, Kyrgyzstan already have no preferential treatment and it falls under unified so-called customs tariffs. And a lot of people now will feel hugely increased tariffs on buying cars. And if a previous situation was affecting mostly businesses, which was already significant in itself, but now it will affect many people. Of course, that was created condition to protect car makers, mostly in Russia, but customers in Kyrgyzstan will start to feel it. It's just a few examples of how it affects livelihoods of people in Kyrgyzstan.
Umida, the nature of the type of problem that Medet is talking about, which Kyrgyzstan as a member of this union is suffering from because of this membership. So I believe the authorities in Uzbekistan are also paying attention to that.
Yeah, if we start talking about the economics, right, that's the first thing they say in terms of the trade. And so what are the losses and gains? I mean, the winner will always be Russia in these relations because Russia will be able to bring more of its products into the Uzbekistan. I mean, I think one of the main reasons why Karimov and his team at that time, they didn't want to join the Eurasia Economic Union is because they were afraid that the Russian products, which is much better in the quality and therefore is a lower price, will flood the markets of Uzbekistan and will kill kill the local production. Right. So that's the kind of, at the outcome, Russian products will be preferred. I mean, they are preferred even now at these days, but when you take out those tariffs, they will be even slightly cheaper, and there will be more variety. And while you are trying to nurture this local production and local entrepreneurship, that the first kind of fear is you will kill it off even before they are kind of standing, they are trying to stand on their feet. So that's the, so Russia will be a winner. That's a big kind of conclusion. But the Uzbekistan, who's again, the same products that it produces are much lower quality. Will they be able to sell to Russia? Probably not, because why would Russia buy something inferior quality than they have their own product? So this will be a big, and hopefully that they are thinking, because so much attention is given to the local production and helping a local entrepreneurship, how they will try to mitigate this this kind of conflict. Will it put out a lot of, let's say, dairy products or meat products out of the market? That's something. And therefore, it will be interesting to see when Mirziyoyev travels to Russia. My assessment, Uzbekistan will join the Eurasia Economic Union, but when it will join and in what terms, that's kind of bigger question. Will it join as a first as an observer for several years, or will it join and will have a lot of preferential treatments that will help those local products and local entrepreneurs, local businesses continue functioning? So that's the bigger question, I think, here. Because Uzbekistan's products, you can say that there are certain smaller products like produce, like vegetables and fruits, but a lot of other produce is not competitive in the bigger Eurasia Economic Union, because those products are much higher in quality.
Sam and Bruce, again, very quickly. We understand Kyrgyzstan is a small country compared to Uzbekistan, both in size and population, and also in economy. Now we also have another example of Kazakhstan being part of this EU. Does the Kazakhstan case offers any kind of hint on thinking in Tashkent about how to proceed with this?
I think Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan are, again, completely different cases for a variety of reasons. Number one, even before the Eurasian Economic Union, Kazakhstan was already in a customs union with Russia and Belarus. Number two, with tariffs, with what level tariffs were before joining the Eurasian Economic Union. I think before joining the EU, Kazakhstan's tariffs on average were lower. And they actually had to hike up the tariffs in order to meet standards which were mostly dictated by Russia. Whereas I think Uzbekistan is coming from a situation where average tariffs are much higher. Obviously, these tariffs have been reducing since 2017. So I think in terms of the economic situation, both are on, I don't think Kazakhstan is, I mean, Uzbekistan is in a similar situation as Kazakhstan was in. And also Kazakhstan has been one of the driving forces of some sort of an economic integration. And I think the stress is on economic and not political integration. Nazarbayev is seen as one of the founding fathers, so to speak, of the Eurasian Economic Project. And I think so there's a lot to unpack with regard to the Eurasian Economic Union, and I'm trying to be as quick as possible. But I think we can all agree that in a way, the net winner always comes down to being, in some form or the other, Russia. And obviously the one example where we've taken of, labor migration, the fact that countries like Armenia and Kyrgyzstan are actually gaining from having, access to Russia's labor market. But on the flip side, Russia's also gaining from having this influx of cheap foreign labor, because it's driving down labor costs for Russian industries, number one. Number two, also with regard to, the state of demography in Russia. Russia is in sort of a state of long-term demographic decline. So having a freely accessible labor market will help the Russian economy. So I think in conclusion, I think, at least from my perspective, Russia is in a way the net gainer, both in economic terms as well as geopolitically.
Yeah, if Bruce, if you agree with Sam, Russia being a net winner in this conversation, can Mirziyoyev just simply say no to Russia?
You know, I would hope that, you know, Amita mentioned that there's options here. You don't have to become a full member. There's partners in this group already. You know, Iran, China, others. Cuba, I believe, has also got some special status with this group. You know, but to use, because I you mentioned Kazakhstan. And I think this is a good example because Kazakhstan was very vocal about the problems that they had to face when they went into this union. Now, the first thing, and Medit will remember too, is that once you join this as a full member, there's all these quality control issues that come into effect. You have to have special institutions that certify the quality of the goods you're about to export within the Eurasian Economic Union. And this, you know, Kyrgyzstan needed to get money for this. And if you remember the $100 million that Kazakhstan was going to give them that Atambayev eventually turned down in the middle of that feud was to help Kyrgyzstan set up the right institutions so that they could certify their goods that they were going to export within the Eurasian Economic Union. Now, Kazakhstan being a little bit further along in reforms, economic reforms, and industrial reform too, was in a better position to come up with these kind of institutions so that they could get their goods cleared according to the standards of the Eurasian Economic Union. Now, that said, Nazarbayev complained several times that Russia unilaterally changed the regulations so that when Kazakh goods reached the Russian border with Kazakhstan, they were turned back because Russia had just altered the standards in some way without informing people in advance that this was coming. So, and even today, even between Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, there are shipments of produce, say, from Kyrgyzstan that get rejected at the Kazakh border because they don't meet EU quality standards, right? And the same with Kazakh goods going to Russia. So once Uzbekistan joins, they're going to have the institutions to certify this. And that still is no guarantee that the quality certifications that they have will be honored once they reach the Kazakh or especially the Russian border, because the regulations might have changed and Russia hasn't been incredibly efficient at informing fellow members that there are alterations to the rules.
You know,
Mohammed, may I add something to in terms of whether Uzbekistan can say no or not, no at this point or not? I mean, this is something I kind of thought through. I mean, could it have been just like, you know, that's because first it came from Russia when they said that that Uzbekistan might kind of join. And I thought, could Tashkent at that point say, no, I think there was misunderstanding, that it's not, we just kind of discussing it, kind of hypothetically, but that message never came out. That's actually one of the reasons why I think that Uzbekistan kind of agreed and drove that process. But once, I mean, at this point, the Pandora box is open. Even if Tashkent says, no, we changed our mind, there will be huge, huge retributions there from Russia, what? Even up to the point we talk about this rounding up and sending migrants, right, closing the market completely to Uzbekistan produce. And that's just something, the kind of risk that Tashkent cannot take and will not take. So I think at this point, Uzbekistan will not say and cannot say no to Russia.
So you say Mirziyoyev cannot afford saying no to Russia. And also, your comments reminded me, I know the earlier comments by the Valentina Matvienko, the chairperson of the Russian Senate or the parliament. She was in Tashkent like 2 months ago following her meetings with Uzbek officials. She said something in the line of like Tashkent's accession to EU is almost a done deal. And earlier, another Russian parliamentarian was also in Uzbekistan, suggesting that Uzbekistan will join the union in early 2020 as an observing member. So, yeah, but my thinking was how they can say that in such concrete terms if there is no signal from Tashkent in this way, or maybe this was a pressure tactic. I don't know. Discussion was taking place in a different level. So I kind of get what you are saying, Umida, in terms of Uzbekistan's place in this discussion at this point. Now, in this context, one wonders why President Mirziyoyev is headed to Moscow next month. What is in his briefcase? and also, you know, discussions taking place about this in favor, in a position of possible accession of Uzbekistan to the Union in Uzbekistan, very diverse discussion. So let's continue the debate talking about this and many other questions very shortly. Before that, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Umida Hashimova, Central Asia researcher at the Strategic Studies Division of the Center for Naval Analysis, Dr. Medet Tolyuganov, professor and department chair at the American University of Central Asia in Bishkek, Sam Bhotia, writer and researcher focusing on economic affairs of Southern Central Asia, Bruce Spanier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. I'm Mohamed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for Southern Central Asia here in Washington, D.C., and we are trying to make sense of increasing discussions about the possibility of Uzbekistan joining EEU. So let's start with you, Bruce. So Mirziyayev is going to Moscow in the context that the discussion that's taking place in Uzbekistan and elsewhere about possible accession of Uzbekistan into EEU. So what will he be looking for in Moscow there next month?
Well, I mean, there's a few things that Uzbekistan's been looking for quite some time, and I think this also plays a role in pressuring them to join the EU. For instance, after he came in, they requested 10 million tons of oil annually from Russia, and they needed to fix, still need to repair the pipeline that goes through Kazakhstan for that. But and I think the volumes have gone down that they've been talking about lately. But I mean, this is one thing that Russia has over them. For instance, that they can use is that they know Uzbekistan's going to need the oil. Another thing is that Rosatom, supposedly they're close to signing a contract for Uzbekistan to get the new first nuclear power plant in Central Asia. That is something that will be financed by Russian banks and possibly the Russian government too. You know, and even the refinery, they wanted to build a fourth refinery in Jizak, and that's been put on hold. But again, the winner of the tender for that contract was a Russian company. You know, Russia has at least verbally said they are willing to sink all kinds of money and provide things that Uzbekistan needs. And one wonders if that will not be something that hinges is dependent upon Uzbekistan agreeing to join the Eurasian Economic Union. I mean, obviously, in the worst case scenario, Russia could just say, with Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan already in, they could move to enforce the tariffs for anything that Uzbekistan tries to ship that crosses Kyrgyz or Kazakh territory, and make sure that they have to pay full or who knows, even more to get their import and export goods that would be going either north or east toward China, for instance. So there's a lot of levers that Russia has that they could play on Uzbekistan if they want. You know, it'd be interesting to see if Mirziyoyev can fend them off and try to say, can we do this gradually, you know, so that we can get our economy up on its feet, get our industry back up to a level where it can compete, or at least be, you know, on par with Kazakhstan and to some extent with Russia and Belarus, you know, before we just dive into this union.
Now, I'm wondering how Mirziyayev is going to balance this. On one hand, the huge pressure by Russia, by parliamentarians and Medvedev speaking about this. On the other hand, there is a strong public opinion against it, like what's the name of that party? Milliy Tiklanish. I think it's one of the influential parties in Uzbekistan. The head of this party, Kadyrov, I guess, he was comparing Uzbekistan's joining EEU with the joining of Soviet Union or some sort. I mean, there's a strong...
But he reversed, Mohammed, if you remember, he in a latest debates during the elections and the debates that they were given, he actually walked back of that opinion, which was seen as that he changed his mind. He said that he supports any union that the country will join, that the union that will give some kind of benefit to the country. So therefore, at this point, there is nobody at the government who is against of this unionship.
So what's the logic behind why he decided to walk it back? I mean,
I don't know if he was pressured internally to kind of change his mind. Maybe he was educated, re-educated during that time. And it's also election time. And as you know, his party and the party that's Liberal Democratic Party, the so-called the party of the president, President Mirziyoyev, they are in the coalition. So it might have been because the head of the Liberal Democratic Party, he said that from the beginning that they were, from the beginning of the Mirziyoyev's tenure, they were heavily working to become to do all this research and back work to decide to become a member, while the leader of one party says this, and then the leader of the other party who is in the coalition says a completely opposite view. I think it maybe didn't come out well, and maybe this kind of parties decided to kind of align their message. And maybe also at that point, the opinion from the top, I mean, the president probably said that we are going into that. Maybe he did not... Arshil Kadyrov, maybe he did not see any point of becoming this one standout point that's opposite to any other parties.
So there is
And Kyrgyzstan had the same debate, and actually still is having the same debate, but this was something that was hotly discussed in Kyrgyzstan before they joined. And as Medet would remember.
And
there were even protests against joining,
So Medet, you know, Kyrgyzstan is a presents kind of interesting example for us. I mean, it looks like there is no opposition, as Umida was saying, in Uzbekistan against Uzbekistan's accession to this organization. And Mirziyoyev seems to be, is not in a position to say no to Russia. So it looks to me that this might happen sooner than later. So your country has gone through this, Medvedev. So you guys have experience of going through this. So what Tashkent should keep in mind when deciding their EU membership?
Maybe what is important is trying to understand the personal foreign policy style, because it was done during Atambayev's early presidency. And he himself maybe envisioned his policy being within the Russian orbit. But for Uzbekistan, for much bigger country, of course, maybe post-Soviet space is not maybe the only space where you can realize yourself politically within your foreign policy, and not to be tried to be, I think, squeezed by the Russian-dominated space. I think that's important. Then I think it was already noted earlier that thinking about certain exceptions, I think that's important. Especially now, it's just 3 years of reform in Uzbekistan is still too early to realize all potential capacity by building different partnership after decades of isolationism, and maybe trying to understand what still comes from non-Russian vectors and how to embed it into, even if such a possibility emerges of joining EU, but how to embed the possibility of, seeing what comes from the Chinese One Belt, One Road, what comes from the South Asia perspective, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that should be taken into consideration. And then I think what is important also, indeed, as was I think mentioned by Bruce, Kyrgyzstan has been experiencing and still experiencing many problems from non-tariff barriers. Even as we speak now, there are 100 trucks stuck on the border with Kazakhstan because Kazakh authorities are not allowing, because of some alleged seals are not properly done according to the EU standards, and so forth and so forth. So this adherence to standards is a tricky issue. And even with that, the politics within EU is not necessarily standards related. There are a lot of trade wars occasionally emerging between almost all members of EU, Belarus and Russia, Russia, Kazakhstan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and so forth. So in that sense, I think that should be also taken into account, because being ready that you should be first ready for standards, but then you should be ready for unexpected deviation from standards.
You know, if I were to be Uzbekistan, I would also keep in mind, I mean, in Central Asia, economy and politics goes side by side. I mean, maybe Uzbekistan might gain some things from joining the EU, but so what also this is going to mean politically to Uzbekistan, which would certainly bring Uzbekistan into closer to Russian political orbit.
Yeah, I think that's just something Uzbekistan should be ready for. Because, well, Kyrgyzstan has been for decades pro-Russian, and our elite generally has been the major decision makers were grown up as inclined to work to get towards Russia. In Uzbekistan, of course, it was a bit different case. So when it comes to political aspects of membership, I think any membership in any integration union is somehow you give up your sovereignty. And then you should be ready for that. At least for Kyrgyzstan, let's say one example, it's for all other members of the EU, is that, well, customs duties are collected centrally and then they redistribute it in a not completely understood by me some scheme, which maybe raises a lot of questions. Well, who earns what and how you get your fair share, it's not quite clear. And then you should blame not your own government in Tashkent, but then someone sitting in these EU commissions and et cetera. Yeah. So somehow some of the decision-making authority moves from your own capital of your country to some bodies of this EU. And then politically it changes a lot of things.
Yeah.
And then when EU is moves along, and then somehow you're becoming more and more stuck with that. And then whatever the fate of political future of Russia with Putin or after Putin, et cetera, well, you have to understand what will be the political whims of Kremlin, in a sense how they can also try to pull different levers, including, of course, they can pull different levers using your non-membership status, but maybe this leverage becomes much higher when you're becoming a member. So in that sense, that also becomes quite often political.
I wonder, Bruce, if you want to say something about this political implication in case of Uzbekistan ends up joining this this organization. And also, I wondered, in case if something goes wrong in the future, is it an option just to leave this union?
Well, you know what? I'll answer the second one because I also want to make some time for Sam, leave some time for Sam 10 to get in on this. This organization has existed in some form or another for more than 20 years. There was the CIS Customs Union. There was a Central Asian Economic Union that, strangely, Russia was in at the end. You know, it's changed names and sometimes it's almost died off entirely. But this has been around for a while, and I think that everyone that joins this has to look at the day when Putin is no longer the leader of Russia, that this organization, that might be the end of this organization once again. At least there'll be a pause in its activity.
Sam, on the political dimension of this discussion, I mean, we purely went through the economic path, but there is obviously a politics in this.
I think if there are particular costs to Uzbekistan not joining the Eurasian Economic Union now, I think there'd be even larger costs to actually Uzbekistan wanting to exit the union, at least while Putin is still in power. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, obviously, as Medet pointed out, there's definitely a loss of sovereignty here. While after acceding to the Eurasian Economic Union, Uzbekistan will be kind of like ceding control over its trade policy. It won't be able to negotiate free trade agreements on its own with third parties. So that's another way in which it will be kind of ceding sovereignty.
I thought Mirziyoyev is enjoying this, you know, improved bilateral trade and relationship with its neighbors, and I don't know why they are having this discussion.
Exactly. So it does come as a surprise, because you would think that, at least with the way it's been going since 2016 and early 2017, Uzbekistan's obviously been actively pushing bilateral relations with a host of different actors, not necessarily in the post-Soviet space, and also towards liberalizing to a much larger extent than something like the Eurasian Economic Union would allow. So it does come as a surprise why they would, in a way, kind of like stop at where the EAU is now.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we have to conclude the discussion. Omida, what's that you would be looking for in a couple of months to come on this discussion?
So you're asking what might be coming up in the next two months in this issue?
Where your eyes will be.
My eyes will be. Well, the travel is happening for sure. Mirziyoyev's travel to Russia.
Yeah.
So I really want to see what are the terms that they are kind of discussing, what exactly they will be saying on the Eurasia Economic Union. I expect it will be coming again from Russia, or at least there will be a lot of context in that. And I will be kind of see where the Uzbek politicians will be taking this conversation. It was interesting in the last speech when Mirziyoyev said he was kind of saying that, look, we are improving, the country is improving, Uzbekistan is joining these big organizations, but I hear people are worried that we are giving up our sovereignty. So it's interesting that he's kind of even started talking about that, that he feels that among the independent thinkers, at least, that there is a dissent to to this decision. So I wonder, will they try to justify their steps and exactly doing what, where there will be some actions taken. So I would be interested to see where it goes.
Okay. So let me take just very, very brief points from each of you on some of the future-looking prognosis. So, Bruce, what you will be looking at, I mean, where your eyes will be. We don't know where Uzbekistan is going to end up with this, but at least the authorities are entertaining the possibility of this idea, Uzbekistan being part of this organization. So what you will be looking at going forward?
To see if they jump in with both feet, so to speak, or if he tries to arrange something that some kind of membership, gradual membership, kind of a path toward becoming a full member that doesn't obligate them to all this stuff immediately, and see if he can keep this, you give them 3 or 4 years of development before they actually say that they're a full member.
Medet?
Yeah, I think maybe one possibility, if it will be smart move, is just a period of flirting on this idea. But of course, with understanding that once you say no, not outright no to the whole idea, it means that you're already buying in. But then if you start that, then perhaps you should be engaged in terms of trying to find the best deal possible with the most possible extension.
And Sam?
Whatever form Uzbekistan's relationship takes with the Eurasian Union, so I'll be looking at what concessions or SOPs the country will actually be gaining from Russia, because there'll definitely be some.
Okay, terrific. We will keep our eyes on that. So, Sam Bhotia, writer and researcher focusing on economic affairs of Southern Central Asia, thank you very much for joining us today. And also, big thanks goes to Amida Hashimova, Central Asia researcher at the Strategic Studies Division of the Center for Naval Analysis in Washington, D.C., Dr. Medet Tulganov, professor and department chair at the American University of Central Asia in Bishkek, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.